This week on the Reflex Blue Show with Nate Voss and Donovan Berry, we all go surfing with cursed taboo Hawaiian idols strapped to our necks. Also, Bernard Wee.
Hey, welcome, Nate.
Hey, welcome, Donovan. How are you doing today?
We're doing all right.
We're doing good. We're back. I'm doing better than you because I was not out all last night getting arrested for throwing parties.
No. The cops just broke up the party.
So we moved it down. They wanted to move it down into our room.
Where was it before?
Room 727.
727. Yeah, says our special guest who we want.
And I was like, okay, we need to break this party in half. And the other people who have the adjoining room got mad because we didn't like open our door and we were like hiding from them. And so they actually went to the front door and got a key.
Oh, a key to the room that they didn't get a thing. But I'm still like blown away that the cops, were you guys like 16? Like, I haven't been to a party where the cops have broken it up.
Well, I think maybe because there were about 50 people in the hotel room designed for two people.
Ah.
Might have had something.
Yeah. Well, that should be a hell of a party then.
Well, when the cops don't show up, it is.
I may have to tell you later what I was shanghaied into last night.
We've already heard.
Some kidnapping.
It's embarrassing. Okay, so anyway, welcome to the Reflex Blue Show.
Oh, hey, yes, we're doing the Reflex Blue Show.
And we want once again thank AIG National for hosting the leadership retreat here, so we can bring in these
big
guests.
Big applause.
And we have the president of AIGA Honolulu.
And an all-around fantastic guy, Bernard Wee.
Hey, thanks.
And I'm proud of myself, even though I wrote
pronounce it
out
correctly.
Phonetically.
It's pronounced Bernard. Yes, you are right.
Yes, it is. It's a tough one there. Well, how are you doing today?
I'm a little groggy, but yeah. I'm having a great time.
You
it's
were
awesome.
No doubt a part of the shenanigans that were going on last
night.
Hey,
I was just going with the flow.
Yeah.
So everything's fun.
I like that. That's a nice shirt.
Thanks.
Yes, Hawaii volcanoes going with the flow.
That's right.
Booyah.
Get it?
Well, all right. So I hope you're enjoying your time in town today. We got a couple things we'd like to talk to you about today, but first let's just start with the story of Bernard if we can.
Uh-oh.
And I have your AIGA Honolulu bio
Uh-oh.
Sheet here that I normally we just plagiarize this and we just read it, but I'm going to give sort of the Cliff Notes version. You were born in Brooklyn, grew up in Oahu, went to high school back in New York, went to and got your BFA from Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
Where you then worked for a number of years before moving back to Hawaii, moving to Honolulu. So
that's correct.
You're a man of many places.
Now he still has an office in Pittsburgh because you can't leave Pittsburgh. That's a great town.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we have two offices now.
Now tell me about that. Well, first of all, why did you move back to Hawaii?
My wife and I always wanted to get back there at some point, and you know, we thought, why not now? This was 3 years ago, and I think it was the right move at the right time. Yeah, and
wow.
It's great. I can't imagine what it would be like not doing this now.
Mm-hmm.
And from a personal standpoint and the professional standpoint, I mean, it's turned out much better than we imagined. So
yeah, the ridiculousness.
I encourage everyone to open up a second office in Hawaii.
That's what I was just going to say. The ridiculousness of my question was made apparent to me as soon as it escaped my lips. I think
why
the real
Hawaii?
Question is, why would you want to move to Hawaii to work?
Right.
But, why would you want to move to... Yeah, what is there about Hawaii that would make people want to go there?
But it makes it sound like the 1119 Studios is going to have to branch out and
you
move
should.
Right next to Wall to Wall
Studios. You need to just branch out and... Well, you'd either have to move offices or you'd have to actually hire someone to open that. You'd hire someone to maintain, and then you would then be the one to, like Bernard, move out there. So how was that? Was the experience of, you founded a company, you said, 16 years ago.
Right, in Pittsburgh with a co-founder. And James Nesbitt, who also co-founded the company, and I, when we started, we thought someday it would be great to have a second office. I mean, we never assumed it would be Honolulu,
mm-hmm.
but we both went to school at Carnegie Mellon, and we wound up having a great run starting up the business in Pittsburgh. And when we decided to open the second office, the challenge was like, well, how are we going to collaborate like we used to? You know, how are we going to work across time zones that are not the immediate 1 hour delay or 2 hour or 3 hour or 4 hour delay. It's a 5 hour to 6 hour delay depending on what time of the year it is, you know.
Client gets in at 8, you're not in there for 6 hours.
Right. So what we do is it actually works now to our advantage where both offices collaborate, you know. Mm-hmm. And when one time zone is just kind of ending their day, we're just getting started. So we have a longer work day if we are working on a project jointly.
So this is sort of like a baton toss.
So normally,
like when the client
says, hey, I need this tomorrow.
And you say, hey, I've got to all of a sudden work till midnight. You guys actually just work till 5. Just the other office moves on to it.
That's right. And it also works the other way around. When there are times when we're trying to wrap something up or we need assistance with something, we send an email to the guys in Pittsburgh. They get it the next morning. They start working on some ideas. And by the time we get in, check the inbox, you know. So there's overlap in hours. We're not completely isolated. You know, half the day there's some overlap. But you know, doing it these days, it's easy. You know, we're on instant messaging all the time. So yeah. I'm instant messaging with people in my office, on both offices, and we can do a group chat. We do video conferencing. I mean, it's virtually easier today because, obviously the Mac makes it so easy with
the
eyesight cameras.
It's certainly a big part. Well, communication has just expanded so much in the last 10 years. We've been doing the show, you know, in its various forms for a couple of years. We do it out of Omaha, Nebraska, which is in the middle, quite honestly, the middle of nowhere, but we still like it.
And also middle of everywhere.
But someone in Seattle or someone in Honolulu or someone in Denmark, apparently, can listen to the show just as easily as if they're right down the street. And that's kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, well, you don't need to necessarily be in a location to do the great work anymore because it's so easy to move the work from one place to another.
And wait,
so,
people are listening to this?
Apparently. Oh, okay. We're going to get the word now that you're on the show.
If you are listening, leave a comment, 36point.com.
Yeah.
Let us know.
So whereas even 15 years ago, what you're talking about would have been remarkably difficult or at the very least cost prohibitive.
Yep.
I've had conversations with people about problems that they've had, like doing teleconferencing
or right.
ridiculous systems that have been set up for that. And I just said, well, God, why don't you just turn on iChat?
Mm-hmm.
That's 100% of it right there.
But we also do collaboration in person. I mean, we've gone to the Pittsburgh office. We've sent people from the Pittsburgh office for extended stints to kind of experience what it's like to work in the other office. You know, they kind of come by and we've gone there. And then we actually have clients that we share. We have a client in Las Vegas right now. Mm-hmm. So both offices meet in the middle.
It's almost
right halfway point. And so we'll collaborate remotely. And when it's time for the bigger presentations, the different partners will kind of meet in the center and present to the client in person. So it works out that way too.
Pittsburgh to Hawaii, what kind of travel time are you looking at there?
So a typical travel for me would have been Pittsburgh to Chicago, which is about an hour and a half, and then Chicago direct to Honolulu. I'm going to say end-to-end, talking 10 to 12 hours is my guess, but it could be done far less if there's a less lag between layovers.
Right. I was going to say, would it be at some point quicker to go the other way around?
No.
And catch it? No, there's still more distance
the globe's pretty big, Nate.
Yeah,
that we're pretty sure.
It's a small world with technology, right. But not with airplanes.
Right.
Still want to go slightly more direct. Not doing the end around doesn't quite work out.
Not so much.
Well, I mean, this is a small world, and we were talking last night a little bit about, you said that one of your specialties or one of the things you're really trying to focus on a little bit there, especially in Honolulu, is the sustainability thing. I know there's been a big, you know, nationwide, worldwide, there's been a larger push all the time over keeping these things more, you know, trying to be more sustainable in our
mm-hmm.
profession.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect, in particular, like, a small area like Hawaii as compared to is it different dealing with sustainability in Hawaii?
Absolutely.
Than
I mean, we have to be careful about using our resources because with the crazy fuel costs these days, you know, anything you do off island will add to your job's cost.
Well, when you're dealing with if it's a 10-hour flight,
yeah.
I assume that it's also obviously a 10-hour flight for anything to get in and out of there.
Right. Exactly. You know, or stuff comes in by ship, not always by plane. And so one of the things that we're thinking about now, and the chapter is doing this, is the sustainability issue, you know. And I want to give a shout out to the fine folks at Infographic Design in Honolulu who've taken the lead on not only this next newsletter coming out, which will be available on our website at AIGAHonolulu.org.
Are you referring to the fine piece you've just dropped?
Right.
In front
so
of
we've got a preview copy here during the leadership retreat. But the idea is with every piece that we design and the decisions we make in the design, from paper to size to the kind of inks to whether it's printed at all to does this get mailed, it has an impact much bigger than we know. You know, you turn to any of the pages that are in here and there's a lot of data in here, and I'm not going to go through it, but you can get it online.
It's thick.
But
thick
it makes you think about, like, these choices we make, how much energy we consume to create a postcard. You know, how much energy does it create to does it consume to create a brochure that's 16 pages versus 32 pages? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it all adds up. And so the thinking behind this is that, you know, in architecture, they have LEED certification when you're designing a green building, and a design is rated depending on what practices they use, right? Well, couldn't there be a way to do that with what we do in our lives, you know, whether it's designing for print or whatnot or packaging? So we're trying to organize and build a design footprint calculator, you know, which is, if you look on the back page here, paper, printing, the design, the distribution, recycling, you know, all of these components add up to something. And so we're in the process of trying to educate ourselves, but then also let other folks know about this process. And so coming soon will be designfootprint.org. The site is up now so that you can register, and we'll notify folks when more data is there.
Now, has even working on this data and going through all of this stuff changed, like, the way you talk to clients about their printing needs and how their pieces should, their, you know, their end solution?
It's an evolving dialogue. And again, I'm going to give a hand to the folks at Infographic, because they've taken a stand where everything they produce is on recycled stock. Mm-hmm. They have a worm bin in their office kitchen. So all food scraps go in there, paper waste goes in there. Certain things they can recycle, they can. They've taken it to the degree where their personal practices and personal habits ripple out to their professional practice, and they're inspiring the rest of us to do this. In fact, at the urging of the principals at Infographic,
how do you go about building a worm bin?
That should be a separate podcast.
Yeah, I would say stay tuned. You get a bucket, you get some dirt, you get some worms. Actually, the worms, and worms generally, they kind of make the dirt, so you could just get some garbage.
Just get a big pile
of
worms.
That's the Nate Voss worm bucket method. Right there. I want to jump on something Donovan just said there. And also, I'm sorry that to put a piece in front of designers, there's an extra space right there.
This is a draft.
That's all right. I'm also, and I feel hideous for saying this, but it's quite dense. I might suggest a serif typeface for the body copy, but the information in here looks fantastic, and I'm going to ask you if I can keep a hold of this
after
the show so that I can have time to go through it.
So the guest editor and the designers of this team at Infographic are updating this. This is still in draft form, and they are going to finish up production, and we'll put it onto that website as soon as it's
And we're going to be sent. So. Yeah, the website again is designfootprint.org, which I had erroneously written down here as .com.
Everyone goes to .com.
Yeah,
not accidents by default.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
we'll
be sending people there.
And we'll also have a link to it from our Honolulu Chapters website, too, so you can get to us many, many different ways.
Right. So one of the things that I would really like to talk about is I know very few people. I've met a few people in the industry, and this is just kind of locally, that, sustainability, that's great, but, you know, if the client doesn't go for it, we can't do anything about it.
Well, there's a lot of things you don't even have to ask the client if they want to go for it. When you're the one presenting the client the paper samples, mm-hmm. you're the one presenting the client the different options. You don't even have to tell them it's for sustainability reasons for everything. You may just say, this is what we think is going to work best. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, we like this paper.
Well, fantastic.
It's really about, kind of educating ourselves first and then the clients to follow. I mean, think back years ago when designers were trying to sell their clients on the idea of having a website and how many clients were resisting the concept of having a website.
I was just coming into the industry at that time, and mm-hmm. I remember just the tiniest bit of, we don't need a website. And then right. when they did, it was just a brochure back right. then. It was just like a page.
Right. And we don't need content management, or we don't need this. And now as clients become more educated, they're asking us for these things, right? Mm-hmm. So the same thing is going to happen here. You know, we're educating ourselves. We're starting to plant the seeds, if you will, with the clients to say, hey, you should really think about this. Why not on a recycle stock? Why not on this? Or why not get FSC certified paper? And until they understand the impact of all of that stuff, they're not going to ask us for it. They'll right. challenge you on it. But if designers collectively started talking about this and educating the clients, they're going to start asking for it. And they're going to find that there's benefit to it. It might be long-term. It might not be immediately apparent, but it might be cost savings. It might be a sense of preserving our environment. I mean, if they're starting to recycle at home, they understand that. They should be recycling at home. You know, yeah. We're conditioned now when we see bottles in the trash can, we go, oh man, we should put that in the recycle bin, you know?
You need to get that moved.
Yeah. And someday we're going to be conditioned to think, oh, I should design it this way instead of using this, or instead of shipping it out by this method, we should do it this way. You know, so we're not conditioned yet. I know we've got a long ways to go, but being in an island community has really kind of forced us to think about things that I might have taken for granted if I weren't living in Honolulu. Here's a small example of that. Recently, within the past couple of months, the last milk-producing dairy in Hawaii closed. We don't even get really? Milk made locally. That has to be shipped from California.
So all of the milk in Hawaii has to be shipped?
From California, yeah.
Someone must be upset about that.
I think everyone is.
Yeah.
But someone's also making money off of that. And as a result, our milk is more expensive than it used to be, you know, just like gas and anything else. So we rely on a lot of things being imported to us that you all take for granted here.
And that's what I was just going to say. I mean, I think there's a fantastic parallel between, you know, when you talk about an island community like Hawaii and having to have everything shipped in. Well, quite honestly, that's the way Nebraska works. That's mm-hmm. the way Wyoming works. That's mm-hmm. the way Florida works. It, so much of it is brought in from other places, mm-hmm. but when it comes by jet, continental states, yeah, not a lot of people really think about that.
Yeah, so it starts to get you thinking about, hey, let's buy local, let's live local, let's eat local. You know, there are movements that say, you know, I'm only going to eat with produce and foods grown within 10-mile radius of my right. home, you know, so that really...
It's a lot of corn around here.
Yeah. It's a lot of soy nowadays.
A lot of soy and a lot of beef.
Mm.
Right there.
Now, you talk about when you're going out and you're eating locally and you're working locally, is there also advantages to, like, working with local people rather than, you know, outsourcing the photography, working with the local printers?
Yeah. We try to keep as much of the work we produce produced local, shot with local photographers when we can. I think that, you know, being on an island, again, some of that is just a pure limitation of the resources. You know, a client can only spend this much money. How can we maximize that budget?
Time zones away from anyone else you could possibly work with.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask, I'm just imagining this scenario where you know, it just accidentally bites you in the ass where you do a photo shoot in Hawaii, but it's for one of your local Pittsburgh clients, right. and suddenly there's palm trees and right. fauna and grass skirts.
Both locations look about the same.
Come to downtown Pittsburgh.
It's also interesting, you know, stock photography is an issue now. You know, so when we're picking stock to use in a client's brochure or website, you have to be extra careful because the first thing clients are going to look at is that does not look like Honolulu.
Right.
You know, from everything, from the way the buildings look, or the skyline, or the palm trees, or even how the people are dressed. I mean, typical business attire is aloha shirt and slacks. And you see someone in a suit and tie, and immediately it screams mainland. And I'm using air quotes in case you can't see.
Yeah, we just caught the wicked air quotes.
Thank you. You have to start to make sure your work feels specific to your audience. And in this case, you know, a client's going to recognize when you're trying to pull a fast one.
Yeah, I'm seeing business opportunity here for you.
Right.
You do the Honolulu specific stock photography source.
Someone beat us to it.
Oh,
damn them!
Damn, I was right there. I was like, I can't do that because I would take Honolulu specific stock photos from Nebraska,
right.
And people would be able to see through that because of the suits.
Yeah,
and
because of the lack of ocean.
Yeah, we've got some water. There's a faucet in the back. There's a spigot in the bathroom.
They would not be able to notice.
Turning the tables on you guys, is there a local look to the design here? I mean, how do you folks handle that? I mean,
No, I think nice.
Yeah, let's look at Drew's webpage. Is it dull? No, I'm sorry. I love Drew, and his work is way better than most people that I know. So, but not really.
Is there a local look? No.
No, there's. In terms of photography, I think that there are more minorities shown in the stock photos that get used around here than there are actual minorities in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, quite honestly, I feel like that's... Like, I understand what they're doing, but I feel like, at the same time, you could at least just be genuine about the people who actually live here. There's a lot of Latino population here, and you still don't see a lot of that in the work that gets done. It just it's not quite as reflective as... You would think. I mean, Donovan looks like he's holding his tongue to me over here, like, I'm not going, I'm not touching that.
Right.
Now, I'm just trying to picture if all these Hawaii shots have, if you guys put in a bunch of, like, white people in Hawaii.
You know, it's funny because there are times when you use photography as placeholder images when you're showing a concept to a client, right? And you might have some Asian-looking person there, some Caucasian person there, or as they say in Hawaii, a haole person. There are times when a client will look at an image and say, you know what, can we use more local-looking people? And what they really are saying is, you know, there's a real ethnic blend, but it's primarily Asian, Polynesian, and Hapa, which is a mix of Asian and Caucasian and other cultures. So there's, you know, the people in Hawaii are beautiful. I'm not saying it's me.
True.
I'm not from
I've been staring at you with mouth agape the entire show.
Is that why?
Yeah. It's not just, I don't, it, most
but,
guests,
I'm
most guests
I'm not
don't get
from
that,
Hawaii.
But I can't take my eyes off
I'm from Brooklyn, so, you know, I'm a transplant. But, yeah, I think that the ethnic mix there, the mix of cultures there, it's a real international kind of city in many ways. You know, there's a lot of Asian influence there. You know, there's a bustling Chinatown district, which is where our office is located. You know, when I first moved to college in Pittsburgh, my parents called and they were in New York saying, hey, how's the Chinatown over there? And I said, Ma, I think I am Chinatown over here.
Nice.
But it's the opposite now in Honolulu. You know, it's I love it, but I know that there are people who've, you know, moved to Hawaii and have never really felt that they fit in for whatever reason, or they get island fever and they move back, you know. And some people come intending to stay for a brief period of time and they never use their return ticket, and you hear that story a lot too. So it's a lot
really
of transient
get back on that plane, I imagine.
Yeah.
They find a cursed tiki statue, right. And one of their six kids gets hit with a surfboard while he's out there.
I've heard that going on. Now, before we do go, because we are wrapping up here, we do want to say, do you have any like tips for the student listeners out there?
Tips for the student listeners. Let me think
Bernard
about that.
Lee.
This is where we're going to edit out my awkward pauses.
Oh my God, we can do that all day
okay.
long. Or we can fill them and talk about your awkward pause.
Okay.
As though we're going to cut it up, and then later ultimately decide to leave it in.
Just like that. Well, one tip that I've given to students when they're coming to present their work to a professional, it shouldn't be the first time they've shown their work to anyone. They should practice this on their friends, on their relatives, anyone who's going to give them time of day, rehearse what they're going to say. Another thing I suggest to students is don't tell me how you did it. You know, I can look at it and you don't have to tell me I created this using Adobe Illustrator, then I traced this and then I filled this in.
Most student Illustrator projects, mm-hmm. we can spot those.
I'd rather know, you know, why you did it. You know, what's the inspiration behind it? Don't tell me how you did it, because we can figure that out.
And I liked your first point quite a bit. You know, when you're presenting your work and you're showing it to designers, it's almost like you can speak the shorthand. But mm-hmm. if you can show it to your mother, your uncle, or your friend who has absolutely no idea what you do, mm-hmm. and if you can make them understand the thought behind mm-hmm. your work, mm-hmm. then you'll be 10 times better off than the student next to you when you're out there showing it.
Now, I've actually got a tip for the non-students, like the people who actually run a business.
Oh.
And it's convince your business partner, like our guest did, to open up a second office and you be the one to move there to Honolulu.
You know what we should do? I am excited about this right now. We should start, because we always do professional tips for students, we should start doing student tips for professionals. Like get the Reflex Blue Show professional tip, and we will solicit those from like first year design students.
I love it.
Yeah. And they will all amount to, you should hire me.
Right.
Yeah.
Use more drop shadows.
Yeah. Now the other, and that's the other thing we do, is we try to gear people away from certain things they shouldn't do. So do you have a taboo typeface for us? This is a type that's either been overused.
I'd like to know the Bernard Wee Honolulu specific taboo typeface.
Yeah, what typeface should you not use if you're designing a piece to say Hawaii?
Tiki font. Do not use tiki font.
Do you get a lot of that out
there? There's a place for that in retro. There's actually only one remaining true tiki bar called La Mariana. And but, you know, anytime you see someone trying to do Polynesian, Hawaiian-looking design that's not from the islands, you know, they'll pull out the standard cliches of the palm tree, hula skirt.
Like two shows ago, we actually talked about you have to be authentic, or you have to at least know someone who can tell you if it's authentic.
Right. If we find ourselves in Honolulu, will you take us to that bar?
You got it.
Yes, okay.
And the other thing is I think if we ever design anything for Hawaii, we need to let Bernard look at it to see if we're actually being authentic.
I would honestly,
he'll say, take out the tiki font.
Yeah. Right.
No more tiki.
Right.
And take out the business suits.
Yeah, right. Those suits. Bernard, thank you for taking time out of your day being on the show. I'd like to thank all of our listeners, of course. If you have questions or comments, head on over to 36point.com. And Donovan, I guess we'll see everybody later.
We'll see you guys in a week or two.
Thanks again, Bernard.
Can I put my shirt back on now?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We're totally done with all
that. No, we don't do that in Omaha.
Oh. Yeah. The pants you have to leave off, but the shirt is fine.
To send questions or comments to The Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.